This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Judges. Judges chapter 18 is where Pastor Sandy will start today on Sandy Adams Radio.
When the priest tries to stop these thieves, they buy his devotion. And notice their offer. Is it better for you to be a priest to the household of one man, or that you be a priest to a whole tribe? Hey, priest, come with us and you can pastor a bigger church. You see, this is a step up for the Levite. This is a promotion. He wasn't committed to Micah. He was just a hired gun. He was just a priest for sale. He was open to the highest bidder. You know, they say, every man has his price. That was certainly true of this Levite. He sold out. You know, it's one thing when the people do what's right in their own eyes. But the tragedy about this period of time is it was also indicative of the leaders. You see, not even the priests were truly committed to the call of God. It's sad today when pastors seek a better offer, a more lucrative job, rather than God, where do you want me to be? Rather than seek the call of God, they seek the better offer. How many pastors have accepted a call to a smaller church? So the priest's heart was glad, and he took the ephod, the household idols, and the carved image, and took his place among the people. Then they turned and departed and put the little ones, the livestock, and the goods in front of them. And when they were a good way from the house of Micah, the men who were in the houses near Micah's house gathered together and overtook the children of Dan. And they called out to the children of Dan, so they turned around and said to Micah, "What ails you that you have gathered such a company?" Sound like a bunch of hillbillies, don't they? "What ails you?" So he said, "You have taken away my gods which I made, and the priest, and you have gone away. Now what more do I have? How can you say to me, 'What ails you?'" And the children of Dan said to him, "Do not let your voice be heard among us, lest angry men fall upon you, and you lose your life with the lives of your household." Now, as I said earlier, every society requires laws. Rules are inevitable. But when you throw out God's laws, then it's left up to the people in power to make the rules. In other words, the law of the jungle goes into effect. It's now might makes right. "We took these idols because we could. We're stronger than you." Then the children of Dan went their way, and when Micah saw that they were too strong for him, he turned and he went back to his house. And how tragic to worship a God that can be stolen. Do you worship a God that can be stolen? You know, here's the problem with today's feel-good, tailor-made, personalized religion, religion a la carte. It doesn't survive the tough times. It doesn't make it through the storms of life. The storms steal your faith. Only faith tied to the solid rock, Jesus Christ, can withstand life's storm and stress. Well, the rest of the chapter tells us how Laish was defeated and how the city was renamed to Dan. And this Levite, his name is Jonathan, served as Dan's own personal priest. He was the best priest money could buy. All the while, God's priesthood ministered in Shiloh. Design a religion might make you feel good, but it never pleases God. And here is the problem with wrong worship. It produces wrong living. You see, ungodliness always leads to unrighteousness. Fail to follow God and you'll fail to do what's right. When a person believes wrong, they eventually behave wrong. Or it's been said, when God goes, anything goes. And the final grisly story in the book of Judges shows just how true this is, how utterly immoral, ungodly people eventually become. And this last story, I got to warn you, it's going to make the hair stand up on the back of your neck. Chapter 19. And it came to pass in those days, when there was no king in Israel, and there was a certain Levite staying in the remote mountains of Ephraim. This was a different Levite, by the way. He was also living among the tribe of Benjamin. He took for himself a concubine from Bethlehem in Judah. But his concubine played the harlot against him and went away from him to her father's house at Bethlehem in Judah and was there 4 whole months. Now, in ancient times, it was common for men to keep concubines. You remember Hagar was Abraham's concubine. In essence, a concubine was a legal mistress. She was legally bound to the man, but with fewer privileges than a wife. She was considered his property. Certainly, this was never sanctioned by God, just as bigamy or divorce is, you know, not sanctioned by God. But it existed, and this man was a part of it. He had this concubine. Well, then her husband arose and went after her to speak kindly to her and bring her back, having his servant and a couple of donkeys with him. So she brought him into her father's house, and when the father of the young woman saw him, he was glad to meet him. Now his father-in-law, the young woman's father, detained him, and he stayed with him 3 days. So they ate and drank and lodged there. So far, so good. Sounds like a sweet tale of a restored marriage or concubine marriage or whatever you call it. But, it came to pass on the 4th day that they arose early in the morning, and he stood to depart. But the young woman's father said to his son-in-law, "Refresh your heart with a morsel of bread, and afterward go your way." So they sat down, and the 2 of them ate and drank together. Then the young woman's father said to the man, "Please be content to stay all night, and let your heart be merry." And when the man stood to depart, his father-in-law urged him, and so he lodged there again. Then he arose early in the morning on the 5th day to depart. But the young woman's father said, "Please refresh your heart." So they delayed until afternoon, and both of them ate. And when the man stood to depart, he and his concubine and his servant, his father-in-law, the young woman's father, said to him, "Look, the day is now drawing toward evening. Please spend the night. So the day is coming to an end. Lodge here that your heart may be merry. Tomorrow go your way early so that you may get home." For 2 days now, this father-in-law has managed to hold on to his little girl. That's what he's doing. He just don't want to let her go. He's stalling her husband's departure. Finally, enough is enough. He decides to make a break. Verse 10. However, the man was not willing to spend that night. So he rose and departed, and he came to opposite Jebus, which is Jerusalem. Now, Bethlehem to Jerusalem, it's just a few miles. And so they hadn't been on the road very long. With him were 2 saddled donkeys. His concubine was also with him. They were near Jebus, and the day was far spent. And the servant said to his master, "Come, please, and let us turn aside into this city of the Jebusites and lodge in it." But his master said to him, "We will not turn aside here into a city of foreigners who are not of the children of Israel. We will go on to Gibeah." Oh, it's going to be safer for us to spend the night among fellow Israelites. Oh, is he in for a surprise? So he said to the servant, "Come, let us draw near to one of these places and spend the night in Gibeah or in Ramah." And they passed by and went their way, and the sun went down on them near Gibeah, which belongs to Benjamin. They turned aside there to go in to lodge in Gibeah, and Gibeah was just north of Jerusalem. And when he went in, he sat down on the open square of the city, for no one would take them into his house to spend the night. Verse 16, just then an old man came in from his work in the field at evening, who also was from the mountains of Ephraim. He was staying in Gibeah, whereas the men of the place were Benjamites. Remember, the Levite was also from Ephraim. And when he raised his eyes, he saw the traveler in the open square of the city. And the old man said, "Where are you going, and where do you come from? And so he said to him, we are passing from Bethlehem in Judah toward the remote mountains of Ephraim. I am from there. I went to Bethlehem in Judah. Now I'm going to the house of the Lord. He's headed for Shiloh now to worship at the tabernacle. After all, he's a Levite. He has some duties. But there is no one who will take me into his house, although we have both straw and fodder for our donkeys and bread and wine for myself, for your female servant, and for the young man who is with your servant. There is no lack of anything. Now, this should have been a clue that something was wrong in Gibeah. When there is no hospitality among God's people, a people who have been shown such hospitality by God, there is something terribly amiss. I think when you walk into a church, I think there should be a certain hospitality, a certain welcomeness. Boy, if we've been welcomed into the family of God, who are we not to welcome people into our midst? And the old man said, peace be with you. However, let all your needs be my responsibility. Only do not spend the night in the open square. And we're about to find out why that's a bad idea. So he brought him into his house and gave fodder to the donkeys, and they washed their feet and ate and drank. Verse 22, as they were enjoying themselves, suddenly certain men of the city, perverted men, surrounded the house, and they beat on the door. And they spoke to the master of the house, the old man, saying, bring out the man who came to your house, that we may know him carnally. These were homosexual rapists. These were violent men. Sexual, perverted men. Their conscience had been seared. Natural sexual intercourse with a woman no longer satisfied them. They were controlled by their perversion and by their violence. But the man, the master of the house, went out to them and said to them, no, my brethren, I beg you, do not act so wickedly, seeing this man has come into my house. Do not commit this outrage. Now remember, in ancient times, hospitality was a sacred trust. Hospitality was serious business. A house guest became the God-given responsibility of his host. But this guy, he goes overboard because he shouts out to the rapists, look, here is my virgin daughter and the man's concubine. Let me bring them out now. Humble them and do with them as you please, but to this man, do not do such a vile thing. Now, I got to tell you, custom or no custom, hospitality or no hospitality, what kind of a man throws his own virgin daughter out to a gang of ruthless rapists just to save his own skin? This is a twerp. He's a coward. He's a slime ball. Verse 25, but the men would not heed him, so the man took his concubine and brought her out to them. And they knew her, and that's a biblical euphemism for sexual relationships, and abused her all night until morning. And when the day began to break, they let her go. This Levite was no better than his host. He had less love for the concubine than that man had had for his own daughter. You see, here's a clue as to why this concubine probably ran off from him and went back to Bethlehem. You wonder why she did that in the first place? It's probably because this guy had been neglecting her and abusing her for years. Again, imagine the callousness and the cowardness of this man, this Levite, the supposed man of God. He grabs the girl he's supposed to love. He throws her out to pacify this mob of sexual predators. Savages spend the whole night gang raping this woman. Only when the sun comes up does the pack break up. You know, it reminds me of what happened not too long ago in New York Central Park. A group of teenagers went wilding, as they called it. They went on a wild rampage of mayhem and anarchy. And when an innocent jogger crossed their path, the poor lady was gang-raped and brutalized. Not much has changed in the last 3,400 years. Remember the phrase? When God goes, anything goes. We see it today. Well, verse 26 tells us, then the woman came as the day was dawning and fell down at the door of the man's house where her master was till it was light. And when her master arose in the morning and opened the doors of the house and went out to go his way, there was his concubine fallen at the door of the house with her hands on the threshold. And notice this man of God's great compassion. And he said to her, get up and let's be going. But there was no answer. The woman is dead. She's been raped and murdered while he slept. And so the man lifted her onto the donkey, and the man got up and went to his place. Now, on the way home, this atrocity, this terrible crime, begins to soak into this guy. He turned into Gibeah because it was an Israelite city. Never in his wildest imagination did he think that such a brutal and such a violent crime could be committed by his own brothers. We're told, when he entered his house, he took a knife, laid hold of his concubine, and divided her into 12 pieces, limb by limb, and sent her throughout all the territory of Israel. A very vivid telegram, I might add. He dismembers the corpse, he packs the pieces on his donkey, and he turns it loose toward the rest of the nation. Such a terrible crime should not be hidden. People need to know. Verse 30. And so it was that all who saw it said, no such deed has been done or seen from the day that the children of Israel came up from the land of Egypt until this day. Consider it, confer, and speak up. He got their attention. Mission accomplished. The nation was appalled and alarmed at the savagery of this brutal crime. Chapter 20. So all the children of Israel came out from Dan to Beersheba. Now, Dan was the northernmost city in Israel. Beersheba was the southernmost out place. And so from Dan to Beersheba was basically a proverbial way of saying from north to south. And we'll run across this over and over again. From Dan to Beersheba, in other words, from north to south, all of Israel, as well as from the land of Gilead, which were the tribes east of the Jordan River, and the congregation gathered together as one man before the Lord at Mizpah. And the leaders of all the people, all the tribes of Israel, presented themselves in the assembly of the people of God. 400,000 foot soldiers who drew the sword. Now the children of Benjamin heard that the children of Israel had gone up to Mizpah. The perpetrators, remember, were Benjamites. And apparently they weren't invited to the meeting. Well, then the children of Israel said, tell us, how did this wicked deed happen? So the Levite, the husband of the woman who was murdered, answered and said, my concubine and I went into Gibeah, which belongs to Benjamin, to spend the night. And the men of Gibeah rose against me and surrounded the house at night because of me. They intended to kill me, but instead they ravished my concubine so that she died. And notice the spin he puts on the story. He tells them the truth. He doesn't mention anything about his own cruelty, does he? He doesn't say he threw her out to the mob. He tells them kind of half the truth. And so I took hold of my concubine, cut her in pieces, and sent her throughout all the territory of the inheritance of Israel because they committed lewdness and outrage in Israel. Look, all of you are children of Israel. Give your advice and counsel here and now. Something needs to be done about this. What do you suggest? So all the people arose as one man, saying, none of us will go to his tent, nor will any turn back to his house, but now this is the thing which we will do to Gibeah. We will go up against it by lot. We will take 10 men out of every 100 throughout all the tribes of Israel, 100 out of every 1,000, 1,000 out of every 10,000, to make provisions for the people that when they come to Gibeah and Benjamin, they may repay all of the vileness that they have done in Israel. So all the men of Israel were gathered against the city, united together as one man. Then the tribes of Israel sent men through all the tribe of Benjamin, saying, "What is this wickedness that has occurred among you? Now, therefore, deliver up the men, the perverted men who are in Gibeah, that we may put them to death and remove the evil from Israel." But basically, he's giving them a chance to save their own necks. He doesn't want all the Benjamites to go to battle just for this one city. The grievance is against Gibeah, not the whole tribe of Benjamin. But the children of Benjamin would not listen to the voice of their brethren, the children of Israel. Instead, the children of Benjamin gathered together from their cities to Gibeah to go to battle against the children of Israel. And isn't it tragic? Whenever there is a gruesome, perverted act, there always just seems to be somebody who wants to step up and defend the guilty party. Isn't that always interesting? Here it's the children of Benjamin. In our day, it's the ACLU. Or Planned Parenthood, or the people of the American Way, or so forth. And from their cities at that time, the children of Benjamin numbered 26,000 men who drew the sword, besides the inhabitants of Gibeah, who numbered 700 select men. And among all this people were 700 select men who were left-handed. Everyone could sling a stone at a hair's breadth and not miss. They could hit you on a dime. Now, besides Benjamin, the men of Israel numbered 400,000 men who drew the sword. All these men were men of war. Now, you'd think 400,000 battle-ready troops would overwhelm 26,700 Benjamites. But a couple of factors even out the battle. First of all, Gibeah was a very remote, mountainous city that was easily defensible. And the Benjamites, they had these 700 left-handed slingshot sharpshooters. Say that 10 times fast. And as the Israelites would climb the hilly terrain, those left-handed snipers could just kind of pick them off one at a time. Pow, pow, pow. So it was really a more even battle than you think. In verse 18, civil war in Israel breaks out. "Then the children of Israel arose and went up to the house of God to inquire of God. They said, 'Which of us shall go first to battle against the children of Benjamin?' And the Lord said, 'Judah first.' So the children of Israel arose in the morning and encamped against Gibeah. And the men of Israel went out to battle against Benjamin. And the men of Israel put themselves in battle array to fight against them at Gibeah. Then the children of Benjamin came out of Gibeah, and on that day cut down to the ground 22,000 men of the Israelites." Oh boy, Benjamin wins a surprising victory. "And the people," that is the men of Israel, "encouraged themselves and again formed the battle line at the place where they had put themselves in array on the first day. Then the children of Israel went up and wept before the Lord until evening and asked counsel of the Lord, saying, 'Shall I again draw near for battle against the children of my brother Benjamin?' And the Lord said, 'Go up against him.' And so the children of Israel approached the children of Benjamin on the second day, and Benjamin went out against them from Gibeah on the second day and cut down to the ground 18,000 more of the children of Israel. All these drew the sword." And why did God allow Benjamin to win these first two rounds of the conflict? I don't know. We're not sure. Here's a theory. Perhaps Israel's numbers had made them a little overconfident, a little proud, a little self-sufficient, and God needed to humble his people before they realized that how much they needed his intervention and his power if they were going to be triumphant. Sometimes God has to humble us that way too, doesn't he? We lose a few battles in the skirmish so that we can trust in God and eventually win the war.
When the book of Judges opens, we learn that as long as Joshua and his generation were alive, the people served the Lord. But once they died, as it says in chapter 2, verses 10 through 12, "And all that generation also were gathered to their fathers, there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord, or the work that he had done for Israel. And the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. And they abandoned the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt." You're following Jesus today. But have you led your children to experience God for themselves or raise them only on your stories? You see, each new generation needs to experience God's faithfulness for themselves, or they will be drawn away by the world around them. Spend some time praying today, asking the Lord how to introduce your children to God's faithfulness. What steps of faith can you take today? You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. To learn more about this ministry, head over to sandyadams.org. Once again, that's sandyadams.org. While you're there, check out Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain under the About tab, and maybe even come stop by and see us. Well, that's all we have time for today, but we'll see you next time as Pastor Sandy continues through Judges on Sandy Adams Radio.